The following programming is sponsored by Synergy Pharmacy. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Pro Hour with Marla Vittorello. How are you, Marla?
I'm doing great. I see that you still have sweat dripping from your head due to the long walk.
Yeah, please explain.
Shout out. Hold on. Shout out to my wife.
With no shoes on, uphill in the rain.
Shout out to my wife on that one. She's had a fantastic dentist that ironically is right around the corner. But when I say around the corner, I'm talking about coming up. And I don't know if it's presidential or whatever. I think it is. But
it is.
Okay, presidential. Mm-hmm. You walk up there from that,
a hike.
It's not only a hike. You might as well be going up a mountain.
You're going up an actual mountain.
But what's Marla knows this because a lot of times. And first of all, let me bring in Sonny Banks, who is Marla's guest today. Sonny, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Marla.
Absolutely.
Well, we pondered this booking for days. Shout out to TJ, who's back from vacation.
Hey.
Well, it's funny. To finish your story, I'm driving to the studio, and I see this guy that looks like Joe Doherty. I'm like, is that him in the road? should I pull over and pick him up?
What Sonny's not saying is when I got halfway up, I started hitchhiking, okay?
Oh, my God. Wait, I saw a hitchhiker recently. I haven't seen one in years. Mm-hmm. And it was like under the underpass, like going towards the Ben Franklin Bridge. And I thought, well, first of all, that's the wrong place to hitchhike, by the way. I mean, talk about
hold on, but lucky for him, you picked him up.
So I'm sitting here, I'm saying to myself, in today's day and age, who would really pick up a hitchhiker now?
Yeah, dangerous.
I mean, we would have you in our car. It would be insane.
I remember when I went to Roman Catholic from where I live now, two doors down is where I grew up. We would go down to East River Drive and hitch it every day. Mm-hmm. And some of the teachers would pick us up. What? I remember a guy, I forget.
Which is even scarier, by the way, in today's world.
Well, you know who used to pick us up all the time? It was a writer. I won't remember it for the Daily News. And he would, he would see us and he'd pick us up. But I remember one night, and I'll tell you this off air. One night my mom punished me. I was dating my wife. And this was the year after I graduated. I was probably 18 to 19. And I'm hitchhiking it down the East River Drive because my grandparents were going to lend me their car, okay? And I was thinking about a roundabout. I was going to pick my grandmom's car up and then go up 95 to my wife's house. My parents were brutal sometimes.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I think my brother and I got in a fight. But anyway, I'm hitching on the East River Drive, and this guy passes me, and then I recognize the car coming back, and he opens the door, and he propositions me. You know, if he'll drive me, but he's got terms.
Oh, he flat out told you that?
Yeah. Jesus. Oh, flat out.
Oh my God.
Hold on, I can't tell you the rest. All I can tell you is I got to my grandparents. No, I'm joking. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's true. I remember I was like, nah, I'm okay. But
I think back in that day when it was a little safer, or maybe we just didn't know about it like we know
but
today.
But for guys, it's not obviously. You know, it's not as risky. If Marla Vittorello broke down and she was hitchhiking, you picked her up, you get your butt kicked if you're going off the long.
Seriously, but, I know, and women today, I mean, we're a lot more
independent.
At risk and independent or whatever. But I even worry about Ubering. There's so many. For the first time, I heard an advertisement for attorneys representing women who were assaulted in Uber cases.
Well, it's not funny you should say that, but my wife said to me, okay, and I'm not, there's a lot of good Uber drivers out there that are making a living. So, but my wife said to me, because, she's like, I'm not Ubering it over there. And I'm like, okay, well, whatever I got to do, I'll drive you early. And then, I was going to come right over to the station. We thought she's going to be there for a minute. We're like, I can't wait any longer. Right. But the point is she did not, she was like, I'm not Ubering. And so, that is a crazy thing.
But here's the thing. Why do people Uber? They Uber because they're drinking alcohol or they're out partying or whatever. So if I'm a woman and I'm drinking and I get into a vehicle of an Uber, I'm not comfortable. I've actually a 10-second story to tell you.
Please.
We actually, there was three of us. I forget where we were coming back from the city, and the Uber driver was a Philly guy. And he was just very strange in the car, hey, where are you girls going? Are you partying afterwards? And we all had drinks, you know, so we were just like, oh, no, we're heading back to a friend's because we didn't want him. Now, at this point, we're kind of picking up. So I said, oh, have you been Ubering for a long time? I'm like trying to, you know, be normal. And I'm trying to get like a little information, like how whacked out. He's like, yeah. He said, well, you know, I was in jail for a long time for heroin addiction and I got caught dealing drugs and this. And he, this guy was like telling us, we were going, we were looking at each other, like kicking each other. All right, don't say anything. So we wound up telling the guy, we're like, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, which was probably dumb of us, that we got out like a block away from our houses to walk, you know, but we knew all the neighbors and everything. We just didn't want the guy to see us going up into our house,
sure,
God forbid,
that's
you
a
know?
Good point. That's a
so
good point.
It's insane.
Well, you know, it's
even though we have to put the address in.
Well, right. And that's my question. Like, for example, if you're a driver of one of them services, okay, you're going to assault somebody, they know it's you. Like,
yeah.
You know you're in, like, in other
you're
words,
done.
Yeah, I think quite often, though, they're impersonating Uber mm-hmm. drivers. So it's really sure. not an Uber driver.
Right, yeah.
Like somebody impersonating an Uber driver.
Yes.
Sonny, I just wish you'd agree with me here, Sonny.
It's those individuals.
But
it's both.
He's
it's
right.
Both.
It can happen
that's
to
amazing.
Both, right. But they tell you, women should get into the car and make sure that they call you by your name first to make sure that they know who they're picking up. That's number one. And then check the license plate and make sure. So I do that myself. I, you know, I try my best because down the shore, you know, there are times where I'm Ubering,
very
you know, here, whatever, but.
Sure.
I mean, it's amazing. I think this, you know, to Sonny, can you do personal injury? We could really get into that. Really a perfect segue.
I'll tell you what we need is a kids Uber. I know they're trying to do that. I said this years ago. I was like, this would be fantastic. Right. You know, cameras, fingerprints, background checks, the whole nine yards, and have your children be picked up and driven locally. You get to meet the person ahead of time. It's the same driver. I mean,
yeah, that'd be huge.
Yeah.
Well, I
think we should start a business.
Pick them up from their sporting events.
Right. Track them.
Go ahead.
Oh,
we have a question on line zero.
It's not really a question. I mean, I'm a Lyft driver, but when it comes to picking up, you know, kids and women, they always check the license plate because I do it out in Westchester.
Oh, okay.
So, and I always ask, hey, is this so-and-so? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I make sure, hey, you're going to this address? Yeah, sure. But when it comes to kids coming in my car, yeah. I don't pick them up unless they're with a parent.
And with a parent. And you know what? I have a question for you, being a Lyft driver. Do you ever feel like sometimes in your, you know, it's an uncomfortable position for you as well when one woman gets in the car, you know, because she can make accusations all day long.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
That, you have to protect yourself as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I get a lot of kids who are like 17 and 18 in my car, and it's always a young woman coming home from work, and I always just like keep silent, just like maybe make small conversation because like I don't want to say the wrong thing to piss somebody or offend somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I find that too. Also, I connected with a female Lyft driver, Uber driver, who picked me up personally one time, and I connected with her, and she said anytime I need a ride by myself to call her on her cell phone, and then she would come. And she was really nice about it, which I know she's not supposed to do that, but you know, I would trust her. Pay you.
It's an amazing.
I'm curious: are Lyft or Uber drivers required to have a dash cam to video people that they pick up?
I don't think so.
I mean, you can use it. I don't use a dash cam, but I know other Lyft drivers have.
They're going to start that, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, here's I'm gonna tell you a story that happened to me recently. I'll tell you, it could have been a disaster of epic proportions. Something like this happened to me one time before, and it happened about a month and a half ago. My wife and I were down the shore in Cape May. We went over to see family members in Wildwood Crest. And, you know, you're running around down there, and I swore that my gas tank said it, you know, it was, you know, we had like 30 miles or something like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, it didn't say how many miles we had left. So I decided I'm going to drive
over. I've had that happen.
It happened.
I think we all had that happen.
Yeah.
Listen to this, though. It could have been a tragic, I mean, this was the last day of our vacation. So we go over there, have a nice day, and I go to leave, and we're driving out of the crest. Now, there's almost nothing anymore, not even the Wawa that was in Wildwood Crest before. There's almost nothing between Wildwood Crest and getting over to the Parkway,
right.
Okay, back to Cape May. Now, there's a gas station, and I imagine if it would have been 3 minutes later, we would have been on that bridge, on the toll bridge. And all of a sudden,
per plunk,
my car stopped, and it stopped immediately. I'm like, oh, my God. So here we are, right? And my cell phone is dying.
Die.
Wow. So my wife, so here we are. I have enough in it. I call an Uber driver. Okay? He comes on and
Pick you up in the middle of the road like that, though?
Well, I gave an address because it was a home right across from me.
I was going to say.
So he pulls up behind me, picks that. He does not speak English. Okay? So he drives me. You know, we get in the car and he drives me to a gas station. Okay? Which I pay him to do. Yeah. But
that's a good idea.
We have a little bit of an issue, obviously, because I can't really. I got to make sure this phone doesn't die before I call my wife, you know, to let her know I'm on my way.
Right.
I get there, we get gas, I put the two the gas in the two tanks, and I'm like, I just couldn't believe it. What if the guy? So this is where the disaster kids. If my phone dies, and that guy leaves and doesn't wait for me at the kids, and I'm 2 miles away from my wife.
That's like the worst case scenario. Don't you do any preparation, Joe? I mean, charge the phone, get gas in the car. Like, don't you have a checklist when you leave the house?
You know,
hitchhiking. What's wrong with you?
I got my plan. I'm going to plug the phone into the car.
I don't trust it though.
So listen to this.
TJ's life.
The guy could not speak English, so he was speaking into the computer. He spoke Arabic, and so he was speaking into his phone, and it was a translator. It was a terrible situation because he didn't even understand where I was going with the game. But what was amazing about it was that guy waited there for me. We got the gas. Here's another thing. What if I can't buy gas cans?
Oh, right. Yeah.
So he waits for me, goes there. I was having an issue with the gas cans. He helped me with them, putting the gas in. The police come, they're behind us, and they turned out to be cool. And he made sure that I got home, that I got on the road. Wow. And then we went back and, of course, got gas. But I'm in no man's land.
That's nice.
By the way, that scenario, not exactly like that, happened to me this happened to me one time when I was at my nightclub, and I'm driving down to a meeting. I am going to get gas when I get to Spring Garden Street. I'm leaving from East Falls. Turns out East River Drive is shut down, so I got to go to West River Drive. They reroute us. It's Temple's graduation.
Oh, yeah.
I'm now going through North Philly, and I'm running out of gas. And I thought to myself, and there's no way I'm in the middle of a line. Like a massive line.
Oh, my God.
So I will never let that happen again. Unbelievable. But there was no Uber drivers back then. Okay. But I will tell you this. That Uber driver saved my butt. He stood there.
Yeah,
there's
good humans still in this world.
Not
you know?
Raving lunatics like TJ.
Because
there is another story where a similar thing happened and TJ assaulted me and beat the crap out of me. And then he robbed my... Just kidding, TJ.
Well, listen, I think everybody at one point runs out of gas. And I remember my kids had to go. This was a couple years for me. And I just hate getting gas. I hate literally pulling up to the gas station. I know it sounds terrible.
That was my son for some reason.
I just hate it. It's such an interruption.
I bought a car. Driving up the boulevard because I was driving this SUV. I was stopping three times and they finally, I'm driving up the boulevard. And I'm like, I can't take stopping and have because it was so bad on gas.
Right.
I went right into Barbera and bought a car that way. It's funny how you have these stories. Anyway, it was the funniest thing. So I go into Barbera. I'm like, just get me a car. And I looked at one and I'll never forget it.
Is that gas tank full?
I'll take that one.
No, but it was funny because sometimes in life you think that I know I don't seem a little trendy, but I thought, okay, I'm going to get ahead of the trend on this one. I like that car right there. It was a PT Cruiser, right? Boy, it was the wrong way. Like that car did not, I thought this car's going to catch on, right?
Right.
I was at a light in some, but I was in the middle of a traffic problem. I think on Broad Street, I'm driving and this bicyclist drives by me and goes, I guess, PT loser.
That's great.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, no offense, but
stop for
like
gas.
That's like the Outback. It's funny because like, you know, there's cars that are, they kind of go with like a genre of people, you know, what's the one that's the elderly. They love it. The Buick. Okay. The Buicks. Like, you can always tell it's a guy. I mean, guys, forgive me for this, but it's always a guy with a Jeff hat.
We're only half the
He's like in his 70s, you know, and he's like cruising. You're like, oh, crap. It's a Buick. Oh, it's an older guy. Like, it's like you almost, it's classic, right. You know? But
yeah, there are a couple of cars you don't want to be seen in.
Yeah, yeah.
The
you
PT
know.
Cruiser, the Cube car.
Right. You know, you don't want to, right, that
well,
little
my
car.
Wife, right. My wife loved her VW Beetle, and mm-hmm. it was. Well,
those cars are cool.
Those are cute.
Well, but this was light blue, right?
Did it have eyelashes? Because they put eyelashes
she had
on
the,
them.
She had the flower in the thing and all. Loved it.
And you see and Joe like, driving a car with eyelashes.
Oh, my God. You could not. How many fights I got in? That's a compact car. How are you fitting in a compact car? You're a big guy.
What are you looking at? I'm at the light. Like, what are you looking at?
Well, you know, I always, to me, it's always like, you know, I hate to say it, but everybody says, oh, it's such a girl thing. Like, you run out of gas or you're this, any other. And I pride myself, because I'm on the road all the time, right, to check in these things and et cetera. But I had my kids in the car, and we were going to sports practice. And it was like the call of shame, where I had to call everybody. I was like, Santino's going to be late to practice. They're like, why? And this is in baseball. Mm-hmm. I ran out of gas. But where I ran out of gas was going right from Black Horse Pike through an intersection. And I was like, oh, my God, because I'll tell you, do not trust whatever your car says. If it says 30 miles to empty, 40 miles, never trust
that's
that.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah, that's what happened to me, too.
Because what happens is eventually, and I could have sworn it was like 120 miles when we were leaving Cape May. We're only going to Crest, right?
Right? Yeah, don't do it.
And all of a sudden, it was, it didn't say anything, which means it's, so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just go get the gas on the parkway right there. It's right before you get on at exit zero.
Well, there's one answer to all this. You just go get a driver, right?
Right. Yeah.
But I'm going home from
right?
Or never let your gas get lower than a half tank.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, which I did today, by the way. And I have to drive to North Jersey.
I sat there. Ultimately speaking, I put, my wife had to stay with the car. And it was safe. But what was interesting was, how you said you were in the middle of the intersection?
Yeah.
Well, the only good thing about that was I could easily pull over.
Yeah.
Okay. And
well, so that's the safety of it too. And a lot of people actually get killed or hurt because they're coming out. If their car is, if they're having an issue on the highway or something, like that on a heavy traffic street, they get out and people don't see them.
Right, Kristen Buttle was on, their broadcast, Kristen and Andrew, and they just got a major settlement or a verdict. I think it was a verdict where a woman. There was an issue with the car, and and she was on the side of the road, and it was like 95, and a truck hit her, and she lost limbs.
Wow. Yeah, it's awful. And look, there's so many distracted drivers, whether people are distracted by the phones, even CarPlay is a little distracting.
Yeah, sure.
It was built in there so that we didn't have to touch our phones or whatever, but now you're touching CarPlay. Whether it's like the GPS or maybe, you're changing the radio station several times. I was like, ooh, and where I just kind of drifted to the side. And you can see that so much more today than you have years ago,
So
and it really is. It's a sad thing.
Yeah. Well, right.
Too many things going on in life.
Yep.
You know?
By the way, so she didn't take the Uber, and I guess you could see who the boss is there, right? So I drop her off and she just texted me
I love her. I adore Elaine.
Thank you.
She's the best.
And I felt bad.
Pretty sure it was you, Joe, because you were on your phone.
Yeah.
Right.
He's
exactly.
Constantly on his phone.
Yeah. Exactly.
And by the way, I was on the phone until outside, and then I was going back and forth. I was trying to get in touch with you and Marla.
Who's going to start the show? Because I come in at 12:05.
Yeah, right.
Sonny, what Marla doesn't tell you, is that, I'm walking up that hill and I can handle it. We work out. She used to come to my class in the morning. I do a aerobics class.
Workout.
Right?
Yeah.
And
the plank class, I think it was called.
It was. Yeah. What was it called?
Plank class.
The plank class.
Where you hold
it was a big plank
push-up
there.
Position.
Is this a story or is this real?
Hold on.
Right.
You be the judge. Reality or not reality. Anyway, I'm working it real. And then she was just huffing a puff. She's like, I can't keep up with you, Joe.
Okay.
I can't. Or is that you that does the class?
He's always making fun of me. So back in during COVID, we just talked about COVID earlier.
Yeah.
I did. It was through the NFL alumni, and they had said, all the gyms had shut down.
Right.
Yeah.
I know you were so disappointed.
I'm Joe.
Right?
Let me just say.
Yeah, I think I saw it on Facebook. You were doing it in your basement.
Just did that. Right. In my
I'm joking right. Because her class is so intense. There have been stories that even really, really fit people couldn't make it. Yeah. So now I can, you know what though? Because
we had time on our hands.
Because reality, then, you know? Hold on, because the truth and reality are not important on his show. I just go off on a tangent and
make it up.
I switched the scenario.
I had my girlfriend Denise also come into the workout. Mm-hmm. And next thing I knew, we had all these viewers on there, but nobody was like saying that they were doing the workout. So people were just watching. But people told me that. They're like, oh, I just watched your workout. I was exhausted watching you.
That's
I'm
great.
Like, all right. Well, you know, it reached a lot of people. And people still talk about that because no one could work out. No one, you know, your gym was shut down. How were people staying in shape? Everybody was like upset, depressed, anxious. Right. Get out and do something.
I'm a stress eater. I was losing weight at the beginning of the summer. And Sonny, I don't know if I had seen you. It had been some time, but did you know? Remember, did I tell you about my foot being injured?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I was losing weight and going for walks. Now we're back doing that, but it was the most bizarre injury that I had ever experienced. Mar, you know about it.
Yeah.
I was literally, the pain, and it was unreal. So I had, it happened. Like
you went to Triano, right?
Right. Yeah. I went to Triano.
Mm-hmm.
And he was phenomenal. Thank God.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this. It was so odd that I had gone. So one day, all of a sudden, my foot starts to, you know, hurt me, throb. And next thing you know, it was unbelievable. But then the next day in the morning, it didn't. So I'm like, okay. Then it did. So I go, that day, it was so bad, the pain, it was my wife's birthday. Mm-hmm. We're going to dinner. Here's the answer to that one.
She made you walk? Walk to the restaurant?
Well, here's the deal. I could have been, you're allowed to get in. There's 365 days in a year. You're not getting injured on the day of my birthday. And that's not her, that's me. It's right, like, right, oh, right. God.
Yeah, just, you could do it.
There's no matter what's happened. So I was in such pain. Anyway, so I had been walking and doing it. Next thing you know, I go to the emergency room. They ruled it, Lankanol. They ruled out infections. They ruled out and a couple other things. But a break.
Listen, your feet are your wheels. You know, I mean, it's
turns
just
out,
the same thing. Hands, too.
Getting out of bed, I remembered after I went to the emergency room at Jefferson, I didn't even tell them a minor slip. And I had remembered in the middle of the night, but I had forgot it was so insignificant, seemingly. Turns out, long after 2 to 3 weeks, I got to see Dr. Troiano, and he was able to diagnose it, okay? But I stopped walking at that point, and I couldn't get back in the groove, and I gained, you know, whatever weight I lost, I gained.
I mean,
it.
You could have went to the gym and did the rower.
Well, we do.
Well, you could have did other things, Joe. I mean, I'm not buying the whole foot injury thing.
I asked Dr. Troiano, and should I do anything? Can I get on the rower? He said no. He's not here right now.
Right? I was going to say,
he's away right now.
He's passing the blame on
another falsehood, but you can't research on the internet. Mm-hmm. I could have.
Well, next time just call me, and I'll give you plenty of exercises not involving your feet, all core and upper body.
I should have, but the fear of this segues, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I will say that the fear, especially how bad it hurt, okay, when it hurt. It didn't hurt. It turned out to be a tendon that wrapped around my foot, and the doc, you know, was able to diagnose it. But and when they got the MRI back, he said, you lucked out. It's a partial tear. Okay.
So no surgery.
No surgery. And so I wore the boot not as often as I should have. He said to me, he goes, I guess, I'm sure there's worse patients than you that get better. So, and he's a little intimidating, that guy, right?
He's the best.
He is.
I love him.
I know. I hadn't worn my boot, and I tried to say, Marla, you know, and he just looked straight at me.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I'm sure there's worse patients than you that have gotten better.
Yeah. He definitely tells
it
like
hello.
It is. He does. Yeah.
But, you know, the first visit, I brought Marla up, and he was excited. The second, I tried to pull that card. He's like, you know, I don't know what you're going to do with this. He said, but thankfully he gave me a boot. I wore a boot to the damn Phillies game. But segueing to that pain that I had, it's a fear, you know, it's a fearful thing. I mean, I was sitting there going, oh, this, because first I thought I had an infection. At our age, the word infection.
Oh, yeah.
It's scary.
It's
scary.
The worst.
Absolutely.
It's the worst. So, you know, I had.
And when you're in that kind of pain, you can understand how, you know, people get hooked on opioids and narcotics.
Sure. Yeah.
Because you just want it to go away.
It's just right.
Some relief.
Yeah.
If you've really been in intractable pain, like actually experienced that, and I have had that, I mean, several, I'm sure almost everybody's had some kind of injury, but sciatica pain, you know, back injuries, those kind of things. Yeah. And I mean, I had two C-sections alone. I could tell you surgical pain. You know, you will, it's like you're just looking for relief. And I remember for 3 days, to your point, Sonny, I had 3 days of Dilaudid in the hospital. I don't even take Benadryl. Right. Like, I don't.
I mean, I had it for my knee. Oh,
absolutely.
My God.
You know, I'm in the pharmacy business and I'm a nurse, but I try not to take anything if I don't have to.
They gave me that too, man.
Well, yeah, guess what? On that fourth day, just on the Dilaudid. Now, the Dilaudid didn't, it just relieved the pain. I didn't feel loopy. I didn't feel anything. By that fourth day, I had tremors and sweats.
Guess what?
Literally on the fourth day of when they stopped it.
Incredible.
Marla?
Scary.
When I had the infection in my knee a couple years ago, I remember I went to a local hospital, and one thing led to another, and they started giving me Dilaudid. And I'm like you. I take very little medicine. So if I'm taking it, so my knee had blown up, and I wasn't even aware of the potential, because it was that sepsis. It was also, I forget exactly what the type of infection it was, but it was not good. Anyway, they transferred me. I'll tell you exactly when it was. When LeBron James was in the finals, the Cavaliers were playing Golden State, and the guy from the Cavaliers thought that they were winning and chose not to, to make the shot there. Right. Okay, it was the first game of the NBA finals. I was in such pain, they took me by ambulance from Roxburgh Memorial to Lankinol. They bring me in there, and it was the worst ride, too. Those ambulances did not have any shocks. Mm-hmm. But I get there. I was in such pain, and I looked up, and they have a TV on in the room, and I'm like, time out to the nurse. I think this guy just made the biggest mistake ever, right? But anyway, I'm laying in there. And at Roxburgh Memorial, I had been there for 3 days, or 4 days, and they gave me the Dilaudid. Mm-hmm. By the fourth night, I couldn't sleep without it. When I got to Lankinol, I said, don't give me it again.
Right.
And in a sense, thankfully, I got through it all. But I was glad for the experience. I don't know how you were, because you know what?
Yeah.
I've always had empathy for people. I don't, you know, like, but for the grace of God, there go I.
Well, I think.
But damn.
I was going to say, and most ERs won't give you the Dilaudid anymore or any other opioid.
Yeah, they don't. No.
If they give you anything, they'll give you an injection so they can control it.
Right.
In other words, you get it there and you don't, use it at home.
Well, or within
if it's that
days.
Bad, they'll admit you and monitor you too.
Sure.
Because, you know, I mean, and just kind of segue into workers' comp too, because, you know, we're all in workers' comp.
Why would we do that?
No, I know, right? Well, no, but think about it. So all of those things that you're describing about the medication and having control and being in so much pain. Imagine now you had a foot injury related to work,
right,
you know, where your whole livelihood depends on this. And, you know, whether workers' compensation will pick up the tab, so to speak, or, you know, we pay into insurance, but does insurance help us medically and help us in that time of need?
Right.
You know, a touch on the opioids in that situation. It's good that we have strict opioid laws now, you know, and the DEA and everything makes it almost impossible for pharmacies to keep ratios with opioids versus non-opioids. Which is a good thing, but the downside of that is people who are heavily addicted to opioids turn to illicit drugs on the street and just look for ways, or they're sharing medications, sure, or buying them from people. So then we have a whole nother problem in the opioid epidemic.
Which, ironically, now we can kind of segue into this conversation. I'm on the front lines of those work injury scenarios are both of you. So, Sonny, for our listeners, remind them, if you would, about yourself and the practice.
Sure. I have a boutique practice in Center City, Philadelphia. It's called Banks Law, and we focus on disability law. So we do Pennsylvania workers' compensation. We do Social Security disability. We do veterans benefits and short-term and long-term disability. No personal injury, just disability law. But our focus is on Pennsylvania workers' compensation cases. And, you know, we see it quite often where the claim is denied, and then the injured worker really has to scramble, you know, to get medical treatment, especially get their scripts filled for, you know, medications and injections and things of that nature. So it is a struggle for them.
And so, Marla, in a, you know, the perfect segue, how would you handle that situation? Tell our listeners about yourself and Synergy Pharmacy.
Yeah, of course. Well, I've had the great pleasure and honor of working for Mr. Banks here several years ago. So that was my introduction into workers' compensation. And I fell in love with the practice of work comp and how we can help people and be an advocate. and claimant friendly. You know, because at the end of the day, a lot of you know, physicians that are panel physicians work for the insurance companies, and they want to rule the roost. They want to tell you who to see, when to see. You can have this medicine, you can't. You know, you can have this, can't have that. True also with the ancillary services, DME and et cetera, and the list goes on and on. And it's very frustrating. So that's how I sort of segued into pharmacy, is because I saw this as a need. Well, how is a patient going to treat and get better if the insurance company says no all day long?
That's a great point.
So, yeah. So our network, our purpose is to find physicians that understand workers' comp, understand the patient type that we have. It's very specific. You know, that injury, that body part related to whatever that claim is, and how we can treat them and not hold up their medical treatment and progress of getting better and getting back to work, making sure that they have the means to do that. So that's how we started with Synergy Pharmacy, and, you know, no out-of-pocket cost, and sure, it gets shipped directly to the house. So we make one piece a little easier for them.
And having said that, when we, if we get into this medical discussion, Sonny, obviously, you know, with the contingent fee agreement, there's no out-of-pocket cost for your services, right?
Correct.
Okay.
We only get paid if we're able to recover for the client.
And so having that medical providers network, because if you really look at it as a layperson, you would never really understand how the medical, when it injured worker, or if it's a personal injury, okay, would be able to get medical treatment. Like, in other words, if somebody, you know, because a lot of times you go into your family doctor, and my brother had this issue, and they find out all of a sudden you've been treating with this person for decades, and all of a sudden he finds out that, you know, your injury is in work, and it's not something he does. Talk about really, in a sense, what a specialty it is, especially that there's a network out there of providers that will not, require, at least up front, depending upon what, I'm sure, Marla, the legal support that somebody has, you need to have a competent legal representative, an attorney, but they won't charge out-of-pocket costs either.
No. I mean, that's the biggest advantage in using the network of providers that we use, because not only are they skilled, but they don't demand payment right away. They'll wait for payment. They'll wait until, the case is fully litigated and you get a decision on the compensability of the injury. A lot of doctors will not do that. I can think of, several big facilities in Philadelphia where the physician will not treat you unless they're going to get paid.
So here's the scenario. If I own an insurance company, and I'm being sarcastic, here, but, so I'm play acting, but I'd say, okay, let's do this. We're going to deny these folks, okay, until we smoke them out. How long can that person, go without treatment? We're not paying their benefits, okay? And then they're going to have to go back to work. And then once they go back to work, we're really going to push back on them because they went back to work. I mean, there are potential scenarios here. Yeah. And by the way, medicine, that's why I said it can be incredibly scary. I guess because I've had this conversation so many times with both of you, I wonder sometimes, I look at the pain and I talk about it, and then when it happens, it's a different ball game.
Right, and you're aware of that the first 90-day period where they're required to treat with the employer's doctors, and that's one of the first questions that I'll ask a new client. You know, did they give you a panel list, and did they have you sign a 90-day injured worker bill of rights? If they didn't do both of those things, then you're not required to treat with the employer's doctor, right. And I'll immediately send them to one of our doctors in our network that I know will treat them and treat them well.
But having that ability to have a medical network that understands and is knowledgeable about the scenario and not sticking their hand out, because let's face it, if you go to a CVS or a Rite Aid and all these big corporations, immediately they want to see your insurance card.
Yep. Well, to Sonny's point also too, I mean, I went to Thomas Jefferson University, and it's very academic there, and they look at workers' comp.
Ironically,
at it like it's like, you're fabricating. Right, exactly. Yeah. Like nobody gets injured at work. Like, right. We're in Philadelphia. Of course. I mean, union guys are getting hurt at work. People are getting hurt at work all the time.
Absolutely.
Even, working for big corporations. And to Sonny's point, there's those three points. They have to post in the workplace. They have to sign at the time of employment. And also at the time of their injury, that if they get injured, these are the six specialists I'm going to see. The good thing about that is, you know, if you need a specialty outside of those, you can still see a specialist outside of the panel physicians.
Correct.
And also, they're still entitled to a second opinion.
Right.
Right? So,
And most employers do not follow the law. So,
right,
so
yeah.
They don't have the list and they don't have the posting.
It's probably like a very small percent. What would you say? Like maybe under 5% of people that actually have to?
Yeah, I was going to say under 10%.
How many though of the workers don't, you know, because I remember signing up all my union jobs, so it's there's a million reasons why, and this is where somebody would, the first thing a lot of people do when they get injured is they go to the boss. They don't realize, okay, and you know, because they're for a million reasons. You would do that. That's naturally why you would, you know, you go, so where do I go, right? He's telling you where, you know, where to go, okay?
Right.
But really,
and that's not entirely wrong, because the first thing you should do is report the work to your employer.
You have to do that.
To your supervisor.
I said, but the next question is, you know, where should I go? Like, you're not, okay, now if it's an emergency room, that's one thing. But if it's also, you know, if it's a medical provider in a lot of these panel networks, we've all heard the nightmares that have gone,
Happened to me. It happened to me as a nurse. I was catching a patient. I was working at Jefferson. The patient rolled out of the bed. I went to catch him. And, you know, they tell you back then, they would tell you just to act like a human mat, so somebody does not fall. Because, you know, obviously their ratio of patient falls and all that. They'd rather you be hurt than have their ratio go up. So, So I went to do that and I pulled something. My arm completely went numb, a disc herniation. And I went down, they sent me right down to their company doctors, which was WorkNet at the time. He didn't order any tests. I said, I told him I feel dizzy. I'm in a lot of pain and I have numbness and tingling all down my arm. He said, well, take it easy. Go back up. If you still have a problem, you know, we'll see you later. I'm like, okay, no diagnostics. So fast forward 30 years later, 25 years later, I'm not trying to tell you how old I am, but you know,
she was three
forward,
at the time.
I was like three. You know, I still suffer with that injury, you know, and I never needed surgery. I did get MRIs after that, thank God. But I just live in chronic pain with this, you know?
It's a scary thing. And we talk about these things and I say, it reminds me of the auto insurance conversation. I doing a lot of shows and educating people on the importance of it. And then I didn't have it the right. So I went to my wife and I said, we got to go and get full coverage full tort.
Yeah.
Okay. And uninsured motorist. Why? Because here I am doing these radio shows and educating the public, and I don't have it's going to come back and bite me in the butt, right?
Well, most people don't know until it actually happens to them.
Well,
sure.
You know? We talk about a lot of these issues, and I talk about the pain. And about a year ago, I was bending over to get a water at a gas station, and I felt something pop in my back, and I said to myself, oh, God.
What was that?
Well, and I'm like, I talk about this stuff and now it's going to happen. And it went away, thank God. But when you talk about the chronic pain and all that, it's a conversation. And unless you've gone through it and you see it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about these work injuries that, Marla, that you had just, you talk about, you know, when you're not seemingly catastrophically injured. Okay, right. Which means, you know, if you fall off a building or something like that, they're not disputing you. You know, you may be, you know, I mean, God knows, you know, if it was a catastrophic accident that way. But just because it doesn't look like a catastrophic injury, and just because there's no incident report that says I got the column fell over and it hit, you know, on
just
top
because
of
it. It doesn't appear as if you're injured. You don't have, you know, a broken bone, so you're not wearing a cast or you're, you know, using a cane or a crutch. You know, a severe lower back sprain and strain can be significantly disabling.
So, case in point, and I think this guy lost his life eventually. I was at my buddy's wedding 30 some years ago when I met this attorney. He was sitting with me at the table. Evidently, he throws a piece of paper from his desk into the trash and it bounces off. He goes to go grab it, right? Because it hit the trash can and fell off. And he pulled his back out. And the doctors were calling him, you know, like Murphy's Law, because it went into, I mean, literally, he ended up eventually dying 30 years later, addiction and all those things happened because of this. Of course, it didn't seem like a catastrophic injury. Right. And my point is, and we've you hear stories like this.
Well, it boils down to education, Joe. And I think that attorneys such as Sonny here, who is going to change the landscape of how people view workers' compensation injuries, like, they have to know that you can come out and talk to me free of charge. I'm going to talk to you about, right, and get you to the right providers. Because if you don't see the right providers and that medical is controlled by people who shouldn't be controlling that medical, that's your
life. Conflict
of
interest.
Yeah,
it's a major conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Well, talk about it, Sonny, in relation to, like Marla said, and the type of story that this type of injury that somebody, you know, they walk in and like Marla said, she ended up, you know, she's 30 years into this and she has, you know, her pain is
it's significant.
It's chronic. Yeah. And so talk about when these injuries that are likely to be the types, including brain injuries, that you can't see. It's not a cracked skull, but, you know, things that they can't see that they routinely turn down and deny. And when people try to handle it themselves, they take full advantage of them.
Yeah, and that's the reason why we, you know, have this medical team that we use on a regular basis, because they understand what's needed in order to prove a workers' compensation case. They understand that, you know, not only do you need to list the findings from a physical examination and a diagnosis, but you also need to give us an opinion whether or not the injury prevents them from working. So by, you know, using these folks who understand the system, you know, we're able to get these claims processed fairly quickly.
But when people try to handle these themselves, you would think that, especially, you know, like, I mean, as a construction worker, I was, you know, you trust people, okay? And you know, they were real nice to me and all this. Next thing you know, right, I haven't gotten paid. They try to.
Mistake is to think that the employer is on your side, because they're not.
Right.
But it's a double fold. It's a twofold. The employer could be on your side. But the insurance company is completely so you got a chance.
This is why a lot of people are afraid to report their injuries.
Exactly.
Because they feel like they're suing their employer.
Right.
You know.
Well, the employer doesn't want their rates and their premiums to go up. Okay. And so a lot of employers absolutely are not 100% not on your side. I'm just saying, in case, just let's just say hypothetically, even if they were, they're not controlling the situation. So imagine if they aren't on your side. And you're dealing with the insurance company, and they see this sucker like me walking in, going, you know, okay, when do, you know, I pulled my neck out or my back on Friday. I decided, and it's a scenario we talk about a lot. On Monday, I was going to wait. I did wait, just hoping I'd feel better, but I'm not. They don't give you the big trophy. There's not a big scenario where everybody claps because you took it for the team in the case that you'd be better on Monday. Now, all of a sudden, you're trying to handle this situation. How many people walk into your office, Sonny, that tried to handle the situation on their own first and are at the end of the rope?
Quite a few. And, you know, a lot of them come to us when it's almost too late. And, you know, if there's any advice I can give listeners out there, is, you know, seek out legal help as soon as possible, even if you're on workers' compensation benefits, because the attorney can get involved with your medical treatment, make sure you're treating with the right folks, make sure that, you know, you're getting the opinions that you need to keep those benefits going.
What about these you know, you know, it's a pre-existing injury. Somebody will, you know, they're handling it and they'll say, well, you know, I
you
see
had that before.
You have calcium deposits in your knee, sure, or something like that, or in your leg. Yeah, you injured it before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, they God darn know, okay, that that's not the case. That's not.
The repetitive injuries. So
right,
you have back pain, chronic back pain, maybe unrelated to work, but if you're doing a job test that requires your back being more injured, that's
right,
still workers.
Well, sure, and you've been able to work, but I mean, you got hurt in high school. Now they're trying to push it on that. They know it's not the case. Talk about why they do that. Number one, and number two,
everything's money.
Money.
They're
just trying to pin it on something other than a work-related accident.
How many workers trying to do this on their own? Or have called you after you they've retained you and say, well, it's a pre-existing, I'm screwed.
Quite a few. I mean, think about it. I think anybody over 30 has some degree of arthritis or degeneration, especially in their back.
Right.
So, you know, an aggravation of a pre-existing or underlying condition is just as good as a new injury in Pennsylvania workers' comp. So if you aggravated something that you had before, that's compensable.
Absolutely.
And I've learned that from you and Marla and everybody in the business, but I wonder why they still pull it on people. If I, an iron worker, know, isn't that some kind of fraud, for example? It's just totally saying is. That.
That's why these attorneys do just workers' comp, because if it wasn't for guys like Sonny who are out there fighting for everybody and throwing a spotlight on this, insurance companies, they will take your money every single month. They will take your money by yearly, and they will get you. But when it's their time to pay up and to give you the treatment that you need and all the resources that you need, they want to fight you. Think of the audacity of an insurance company to do that.
Right.
To these people who have paid in to the system, the companies and the employee. But it's ridiculous.
And it lends – what's that, Sonny?
It said it is ridiculous. I mean, yeah. You pay all these premiums to protect your employees, and then the insurance companies deny the claims.
And that lends me to, if it's such a situation out there, okay, and we want to educate the listener – okay. Hey, Sonny, they're not suing their employer, right?
They are not.
They're opening up a workers' compensation claim.
Right. Most employers purchase workers' compensation insurance from an insurance company. There are some big employers that are self-insured, so they're actually paying the workers' compensation benefit.
What's the difference in those cases where it's is there a difference in dynamic when it's a self-insured company and a small company that's got an insurance company?
Yeah, I mean, self-insurers are more difficult get a payment from, because they're the ones that are actually paying wage loss and medical benefit.
In a sense,
to insurance carrier.
When it's self-employed, are you suing your employer at that point?
You are, in a sense, but typically the larger employers that are self-insured, they use TPAs.
Yeah, TPA, third party.
Yeah,
right.
You know, like a PMA or a Sedgwick claims. And they're the ones that actually administer the claim.
Okay.
But in the end, the self-insured is paying the benefit.
So, having said this, Marla, you know, with your company and with a lot of medical providers, knowing that somebody, a regular person, is out there, and it's heartbreaking in a sense. They've been working hard for their company their whole life, and now something happens. And not to mention they're damn injured, okay, and they're in a lot of pain. But knowing it's such a volatile market, okay, how important is it for you and Synergy to know that you're working with individuals, okay, that the client has, good legal representation that's fighting on their behalf, that will also protect your bill if possible, because otherwise you could never get paid out there if somebody's out there trying to do it and getting beat up on their own, okay, how important is it for you to make sure that, or just, I don't say about making sure, but just to know that client, that injured worker or injury victim, it has good representation that's not only doing a good job for them, but also, in a sense, protecting all the medical providers in the process. Because you could damn well know that if there was no attorney representation, that they wouldn't, and they don't want to cover the client, that they're not going to cover the damn vendors.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, I think it's really important. And number one, you have to have a good team. And throughout the years, and this is where experience comes in and education for people to understand that you're not just locked into one provider on a panel from an insurance company. But we've been in the industry for so many years, we know who the good doctors are. We know who the great attorneys are. And we will work with them, because I don't want to find, even for clients or patients that come in and they utilize our pharmacy, if they don't have an attorney on board, I'm questioning why, you know. And if that doctor says, oh, the claim's open, we don't have any problems, we'll get an attorney once they start rocking the boat, that's already too late. Right. You need an attorney from the beginning. The moment that workers' compensation claim is reported and opened, you have to have an attorney to open it.
And when we're talking about workers' compensation, okay, And I'm sure from your view, I'm sure in your office with the team there, it's so important, not let alone the damn client, okay, not to have an attorney that's a dabbler, in workers' compensation. I've met with John Zervanos was somebody, he's a personal injury attorney, and I do a lot of radio with him, and he said to me, he said, you know, when I started off the, I dabbled in workers' compensation. I got out immediately because things are changing constantly. You need an expert in all those things. Now, John's not a dabbler. He's a world-class attorney, okay? but he immediately, but I, my point is, even an attorney at his level flat out said to me, and it was recently, he said, you know, I think he probably told me and you this story, Sonny, where he said, you know, I tried it and I got right out immediately because it's such a complicated area.
Well, just like any you know, specialty or limited area, there are a lot of nuances to the law. So you really need to do it on a regular basis to understand it. You know, it's just like similar to picking a doctor. I mean, if you have a heart problem, you want to see a cardiologist. You don't want to see a foot doctor.
Well, it's like the difference between sitting in those seats and this one. It's a very complicated seat I'm sitting in. You just can't have a dabbler over here,
that's
right?
That's true. So true, Jeff.
But, no, it's true.
But a good example of it would be, you know, say a neighborhood guy who's an attorney, maybe even does real estate, and he's going to handle a he's an attorney, and he's going to handle for his cousin or whatever. You know, when he's dabbling. You know, like
you say,
I'm sure you say, what are you guys saying in your back office going, oh, this guy's got, but you don't want to get in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But somebody, you know, they hire a dabbler who might be an excellent real estate attorney.
So I do want to interject a little bit. So I will tell you this, just even from the pharmacy perspective, when names come across, and we have a client from Sunny Banks, we're just get the client whatever they need. You know, it's just hands down.
We trust
Sonny so much. We know he's such a great attorney.
Absolutely.
When an attorney kind of comes in that we don't know who this attorney is or they have a bad reputation, we're a little bit more attentive to that case in terms of bills and reaching out to the attorney's offices and say, hey, what's going on? Is there a hearing? You know, because it's like you have to trust the people that you're working with. And sometimes it's just because we don't know them well enough and we want to just kind of understand.
Yeah, and comp cases are so medical dependent. I mean, you want to do your very best to protect your medical providers. Think about it. If I'm not able to protect the pharmacy,
who are you going to have?
My client's not going to get the medication that they need in order to participate in physical therapy and their other treatment.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. Looking at it from the outside, knowing that there's a system in place, okay, that gives somebody a fighting chance, okay? Because I'll tell you what, it's amazing how in life you could sit there and think of you know, business ideas. And why they'd never work, right? And you would think to yourself, there's no chance if somebody, what used to happen 30 years ago, okay? And maybe 30 years ago, the network was developing. Sonny, what happened when you first got in this business 2.5 years ago? Right? but 30 plus years ago, whatever, what was it like then? What was the landscape like? Because you're a pioneer.
There was no synergy. All the pharmacy stuff fell on me. And it was really difficult to get my clients the medications that they needed, especially if you don't have insurance. And most of my clients don't have insurance. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really difficult.
So in a sense, though, like being a pioneer of the, because no question, you guys had to work your butts off to develop and convince medical providers and probably educate them.
And it changes state to state. You know, what we can do in Pennsylvania, we certainly cannot do in New Jersey. So having a really strong attorney who knows the law, who understands it, and is keeping up with everything they need is huge. You know, it's everything.
Well, you guys are not, you know, you're in Pennsylvania, but where else is Synergy?
Yeah, we're in New York, New Jersey, Florida, Maryland, Delaware. You know, we're more of a regional pharmacy, and we just kind of stick to our region.
It's a pretty big region.
Our region.
It's a pretty big region.
It's a pretty big region. We have, you know, 2 full-time sales reps. I'm out all the time, you know that. So it's, you know, it's a lot. But I think the biggest thing that makes us, and we're a smaller family business, but the biggest thing, no matter what state we're in, it's the continuity of care. We want to make sure the patients have what they need at no cost.
Well, it's a niche. It's a real need. You know, thank God that Synergy exists.
Well, having said that, TJ, what are we looking at? We got 2 hours left.
2 hours. We want to hear about the nightclub business and the ironworkers.
All right, hold on. Here's my first day in the program.
Oh, wait, I have to ask this. So how's your family, and are your sons still playing baseball? I just have to ask this.
No baseball. Okay. My youngest just graduated last year.
Last year, okay.
So he's still at home trying to find himself. I think he wants to get into real estate.
Oh, cool.
My oldest works for Comcast, and my middle son is at BC getting a master's in screenwriting.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. So nobody wants to...
I said BU.
BU.
Shouldn't get those mixed up.
So nobody wants to go into law? No. They don't want to do? Okay. No. All right. They're like,
that's
yeah,
a legendary attorney.
You have a nice.
They're like, dad works too hard.
Well, yeah. I'm going to talk to the guys because it's not fair that you're done paying tuition to Sonny. Let's see if we can get a master's
degree.
Thank God.
Yeah.
We just started with a high school, like private high school now, and it's the tuition's come around really quick. Yeah. I can't even imagine college.
I've been paying since pre-K.
Yeah.
Wow.
Private school.
Good for you now, Sonny.
I put in my time.
Yeah.
Listen, I lost my money.
I want to shout out Bernie Smalley. I don't know if you did. Did he call you yesterday?
He didn't call me, but I did see the email.
Yeah, and he was very excited. Nice. He's gotten the Legends of Justice Hall of Fame's motto.
Congrats, Bernie.
Yeah, well deserved. And so we've had, so it's a new initiative that spawned from our Legends of Labor Hall of Fame. And we have put together a nice board. Sonny's at the forefront of that board, and so a lot of good things coming. I had the opportunity to talk to Bernie yesterday, and he was very happy and well deserved. Sonny, if you would, contact information for yourself at the firm.
Sure, Banks Law 215-561-1000, and our web address is www.bankslaw.com.
Marla Vittorello, Synergy Pharmacy.
Synergy Pharmacy. We're out in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania. I'm one of the partners in Synergy. And please look us up at synergyscripts.com.
Awesome. Fantastic. Shout out to TJ and Sam in the producer's room. Definitely a great show, Sonny. Always as a fun.
Always a lot of fun.
Sort of Sonny,
I
want
to do this one again. I want to do this again. I kept looking at the clock and it kept moving. I'm like, this is
Mara,
this
here's
is a bad show.
So Sonny's show is coming back online after a little hiatus, the Sonny Banks show.
Yeah.
And so you know what? You'll be on the other side.
Please come.
That would be cool. Yeah. What's funny? When we start talking about Uber and Lyft, there's so many work comp stuff with Uber and Lyft, too, that we didn't even get into.
Exactly.
Yeah,
we will.
Absolutely.
We're going another 3 hours here, buddy. We appreciate everybody for tuning in to the Pro Hour at Marla Vittorello. Shout out to Synergy Pharmacy for making it happen. Our guest, Sonny Banks, and, of course, TJ and Sam in the producer's room. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.